It's time once again for the only show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug DeFeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be with you here in studio today, and welcome to today's episode of the Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug DeFeller. I'm a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation, and I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years, helping them to clarify their objectives and reach their goals. And if you'd like to know more about my coaching service, just go to the website, thecoachingperspective.com. Well, our guest for today is Stephanie Paul, writer, producer, owner of AdvanceYour.org, presentation coach for TEDx Productions, and all-around guru for how to talk to the audience and get them to remember what you said. Stephanie specializes at making good communicators great connectors. As the head of training and development at AdvanceYour, clients learn the art of mastering your message. And this coaching provides executives, trainers, leaders, and presenters the tools they need to elevate an already interesting communicator into an awe-inspiring and engaging connector. I need to sign up. With 26 years of unique experience as a director, producer, stand-up comic, oh, we're going to have humor today, and actor working in 8 countries, Stephanie has the expertise to uncover the speaker's strengths and weaknesses, eliminate distracting habits, and impart the ability to connect with and entertain their audience, both live and on camera. Stephanie, welcome to the Coaching Perspective.
Thank you very much, Doug. It's lovely to be here.
Well, it's a little intimidating to have you here today. as a professional communicator, I'm going to, I could feel a little pressure here.
Oh, no, don't. I won't stand over you. I'm not overbearing in that way.
I didn't think you were. But, I've been to your website, and you have some great client referrals up
Thank
on
you.
Your website.
Thank
really.
You.
They love you.
I know. It's
they
kind
do.
Of nice.
And one of the key things that I noticed in listening to a number of them is the emphasis on humor in the presentation. So I worried all morning about what did I have to be humorous about. And then it hit me. That's up to you, not me.
Oh, okay. Oh, gosh. Now the weight's on my shoulders.
Stand-up comic? Why would I try to be the humor person? You're the expert.
Well, it's kind of funny. I like to tell people you're the funniest person you know. And 86% of what we laugh at has got nothing to do with jokes. In fact, it's actually bonding. It's a community-building thing, and it's a connection thing. So it's weird, but people think humor needs a joke, but it doesn't, because 86% of what we laugh at is not a joke.
So if it's not a joke, what is it?
It can be something simple as somebody talking about the elephant in the room and everybody sort of laughs. It can be something as simple as just, I had a bad day, you had a bad day, and acknowledging something that's a common denominator. It's something that multiple people in the room have experienced together. If you know anything about laughter yoga, I'm also a certified laughter yoga trainer and leader. Laughter yoga was started, I think it was in 1991, by Dr. Kataria in India. And he's proven that you actually don't need anything specific to laugh at. We can actually just laugh. And do you know who Amy Cuddy is with the...
No, I don't.
TED Talk. She does the TED Talk on how our minds change our bodies and our bodies change our minds.
Okay.
And laughter is pretty much the same thing. It's actually the most contagious behavior we have. And when somebody else is laughing, especially a group of people, your neurons fire off in your brain and you automatically just start laughing. Everybody can relate to that experience of walking past a room of people laughing. You suddenly smile. What are they laughing at? And you have a bit of a giggle, but you don't even know what you're laughing at. It's because we bond that way.
See, in those moments, I hope nobody's looking at me because it's like, what are you laughing at, Doug? I don't know.
Random. You don't
Everybody
need
else
anything.
Was laughing.
Yeah, you don't need anything. It's really fantastic.
So, look, give us a little bit about your background. I mean, I mentioned a few things, but give us some of the color behind it. How'd you end up where you're at?
Oh, that's a long story. How much time have we got? let's see. I started on stage when I was 4, dancing.
And we're going way back.
Yeah, now. Yeah. By the time I was 10, I was doing drama and all that kind of stuff. By the time I was 16, I was shooting commercials. So I've pretty much, the whole singing lessons, everything, I've done voice training, all that kind of stuff since I was very young. So I've always been into it. I've always been really interested in it. And how I got into the coaching stuff, I think it's innately built into me. My father was a professor at university and my mother was a school teacher. And so I sort of have that whole, I've coached everything I've ever sort of done, whether it was dancing or gymnastics or all the other stuff, you know, acting and things like that. I've always sort of coached around it or taught other people. And when I moved from LA, I went through a divorce. Very depressing. No, actually, it was.
And
great.
You're the only person I know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I think it's an Orange County thing. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's like in the water. And I decided I wanted to get out of Hollywood. I wanted to sort of move away, and I wanted to go and like regroup. And I moved to San Clemente, and I love it. It's a beautiful beach town, and I'm a surfer.
I love it. So relaxing there.
Mm-hmm. So while I was down there, I started coaching some people. It was just sort of helping people out, really. And a lot of my friends kind of said, who were mentors to me, said, you should be doing this in the corporate world. You're really good at it. And one thing led to another, and here we are.
Wonderful. And you've been doing what you're doing. Well, first, let's explain what Advance Your is.
Okay. Advance Your, everyone sort of says, "What Advance Your what?"
And yeah, it's dot, dot, dot. Yeah, I saw your
And, you know, it is Advance Your connection. But the reason why it's Advance Your is because I have a multifaceted background with the directing and the producing and the production background as well as the performing. So it could be as simple as advance your connection on stage, or advance your connection as a speaker, or advance your connection on camera, or advance your connection with your video blog. So that's why it's sort of just advance your. You come to me and tell me what you want to advance on as far as presentation and communication and connecting goes.
Okay. And when connecting, we're not talking about networking.
No.
You're talking about delivery of a message.
Exactly. And how we connect as human beings. So I teach people essentially to connect to themselves, to connect to their audience, whether that's one or 100,000, and to master their message. So when we connect on a human level, we connect emotionally. So, you know, if you aren't connected to yourself first and you really understand what you want to give, what it is that message is, then you won't connect to your audience because you're already starting from a disconnected place.
I'm going to jump right into this. You know, my brother was in the studio business. He was a construction coordinator, built sets.
Mm-hmm.
He's the worst person in the world to ever watch a movie with. Because he points out everything that's wrong.
I can relate
to that. It totally ruins the fact that you're watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So here you are. You're a professional in how to communicate. And you are watching people do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
How do you live with that?
It's kind of funny because it depends on the person. It's a thing that I can turn on or off. You know, it's kind of like I've got a couple of close friends who are psychologists, and they have similar things from people that when they tell people they're a psychologist, oh, you know, I've got this issue.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe you're going to be able to see my problems, or, you know, and people freak out. And my psychologist friends say the same thing. It's something you turn on or you turn off. It's something that you actually sort of have to switch into focus to see. And I've had some clients say to me, like, oh my God, you can read my mind. Well, I can't read your mind. I can just read behavior, and I can just show how behavior connects us. So I can't read exactly.
Okay, thank you.
But yeah, but when you're fully connected to someone, you can actually really understand them without words.
Okay. So here's a question that I wanted to ask you, and I don't mean to get into politics, but of course, we're watching a lot of the nominees for the Republican and the Democratic Party. Without getting into what their political platform is, what's your observation of how they're communicating?
Can I tell you something else? Politicians always kind of talk about having an agenda, the agenda for this or the agenda for that. And that word's never sat well with me. So one day I actually decided, to look it up in the dictionary, and I actually got it here in front of me. The dictionary definition of it is a list of things to be considered or done, a plan or goal that guides someone's behavior that is often kept secret. And this doesn't play well with me because when there was actually a study done at UCLA and on likability.
Okay.
And one would think that likability would be, you've got to be sexy or pretty or funny or, successful or rich. And the three top likability things were sincerity, transparency, and empathy. So agenda doesn't really play into those three things.
Interesting.
Connection. Because it's the secret agenda, you know.
So it has nothing to do in a way with what they're saying. It's how they're saying it.
Mm-hmm. And politicians are generally, their agenda is to get your vote. So it doesn't matter who they are. The agenda is to get the vote. That's the ultimate goal at the end of the day, which is why it's easy to see straight through them. I can't really... I've tried to watch debates and I can't. Like, I just get so frustrated because I don't believe any of them. Like, it's, and they're so disconnected from reality, I think, you know.
How do you feel when you're on the other side of the mic, like today, instead of telling me how to do it, you're here yourself as the presenter?
I just try and stay in the moment.
Okay.
You know, so and stay focused on you and the questions. I've always been trained that it's always about them. Even though I'm talking about me or my experiences, it's more about what you want to know. So I'm sort of more interested in listening to those questions.
Oh, this is going to be weird because I'm focusing on you.
This is great. We're connected.
So you just presented last week at the ICF conference for Coaching Week. How was that for you?
It was fantastic. It was really, really fun. I opened and got a lot of laughs. It's kind of interesting, really, because, you know, I had my whole 30 minutes prepped and... there was a lot of stuff that I sort of improvised, mainly with the material that got laughs, but it was fun, you know.
So do you find that this is the secret of a good presentation, is not being tied to what you've prepared?
Yes and no. You should be memorized somewhat to the degree of the information that you're going to give and the stuff that you want to impart that's important. And then you should also be prepared to allow what I like to think of as your creative gifts to come through. Because sometimes we get, you know, a thought that goes, oh, yes, I should share this. And it's, you know, you should be able to step away and improv a little bit with those thoughts. But if you don't know your material well enough, you can't necessarily go back to your place where you sort of walked away and pick up again. And that's where people tend to waffle and wander off into, you know, a soliloquy that isn't and can become very boring too.
You're very involved in TEDx. Tell us about that.
Yes. Well, I was fortunate enough. I started with TEDx Orange Coast, and last year I got to go to Iran and coach at TEDx Kish. And this year I am producing TEDx Mission Viejo.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? What is TEDx Mission Viejo going to be and when?
It's going to be on October 14th. It's a Friday from 12 till 6. And then afterwards we're going to have a little VIP mixer. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be at the Mission Viejo City Chambers opposite the library in Mission Viejo. The website's being built currently right now, so I can't, but it is TEDxMissionViejo.com.
Okay.
So if you write that down and, you know, in a couple of weeks or a month or so when it's up, we'll be able to get tickets for it. We're still looking for sponsors right now, in kind or in cash.
Always cash.
Yeah. And the concept or the TEDx idea is perception.
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 Explain that.
It's very open. In regards to, we're looking for a very diverse group of speakers. We only have a few slots because it's only a half day. It's not, we don't have 30 speakers or anything like that. So we want perception from, I'm hoping to get as many local people as I possibly can. I'm sort of turning over rocks right now looking for people locally because I wanted to initially start a great conversation with the local people in Mission Viejo or in surrounding cities. It was like, hey, I had no idea that person lives in my neighborhood. And they're doing this amazing thing. And they've got this interesting perspective and perception on this thing that I never thought about. So that was kind of really the idea behind it.
You know, my impression of TEDx is that what really, a lot of things probably made them popular and successful. But I think one of the keys that I assumed was responsible for their success was the 20-minute limit.
Well, it's now 18.
18, okay. Mm-hmm.
It's 18 minutes. And essentially, you know, like last year I worked with a client of mine and he had a 6-minute. And the short ones are actually quite hard to be succinct, to wrap story in there and get a true, clear thought and message across is quite difficult.
So what is the key, in your opinion? What is the magic time frame given today's fickle audience and their choices of what to listen to and their training of multitasking on their electronics constantly?
Well,
what would you suggest?
Scientifically and statistically, they've proven that human beings can only have an attention span of 7 to 10 minutes before they wander off. They can only register and retain 3 to 7 items of information. So given that, you know, you probably wouldn't want to do it longer than 5 to 15 minutes, really. So. And you want to be engaging the whole time. So laughter is a great way to bond and connect, but it's also a great way to engage and retain. Laughter helps us retain information. Laughter helps us wake up and focus. Believe it or not. So if you've got some little, you know, stand-up comedians, they say a good stand-up comedian should have 7 laughs a minute. You probably don't want that in a presentation. But I would say if you can get, it's actually a famous TED talk Sir Ken Robinson does on education. And actually, no, it's the second one he did. It's not on education. Sorry, people. But I use the opening minute of his presentation because he's not telling jokes. He's literally saying real things. But the way he presents it and with his pausing, he actually gets 10 laughs in the first minute and 15 seconds of his presentation. And he just makes comments on things that people, you know, fable things that people sort of believe or tend to say. Or
assumption here is to make the connection, to get people to remember that humor is critical in the early parts of whatever you're doing.
Yeah, especially, I think the problem with it is a lot of people don't realize that they're the funniest people that, you know, you are the funniest person you know. I'm the funniest person I know because I crack myself up all the time. You know,
I live in a world all alone here.
Yeah, yeah, no.
It's hilarious.
But, you know, everybody's had those moments where you just, like, laugh at yourself for doing something silly, or you forget, you know, you're looking for your sunglasses and they're on your head. You know, those things kind of crack us up.
The question is delivering the humor in the early parts of the message. How critical is that?
Okay, thank you very much for bringing me back to my point. It's relatively critical because if people aren't listening to you, you'll get focus and you'll get engagement straight away. Usually it's something that's incredibly obvious. People tend to not go for it. They go for a written joke, and it's kind of a tired way of getting a laugh.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that, because if you're proficient at writing jokes, you know, go ahead. Or if you want to steal somebody's that you think is really great and it works with your presentation, go ahead by all means. But I did a presentation a month ago, and I was looking for something. I always look into the audience. The audience will tell you what you need to know about how to be funny, especially if you're focused on them, and your focus should be on them, not necessarily your agenda or what it is that you're having to say. So they will always give you laughs. So I was looking for something, and I'm like, how am I going to open this? And I looked around the room, and I noticed that about 2/3 of the room were wearing pink, red, or pumpkin. And I'd overheard a conversation of two women prior to me getting up on stage who were talking about how pumpkin was the in color right now. So I thought, this is hilarious. So I walked on stage, and my opening statement was, obviously 1/3 of you didn't get the memo to wear pink, red, or pumpkin today. And the whole room just burst out laughing, because it was the most obvious thing in the room.
That's simple. Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound simple.
Oh, it is. It is. People just have to trust. They just have to trust, and they have to be willing to be vulnerable and put themselves in those positions. And 9 times out of 10, they'll get a laugh.
Okay. I'm going to ask you at the end of the show, but just in case somebody gets interrupted and doesn't stay with us to the end, mm-hmm. How do people get in touch with you?
Oh, yes. My website is www.advancedyour.org, and that's advancedyour.org. Or they can look me up on Facebook. My Facebook URL is Stephanie Paul Advance Your. My Twitter is Stephanie Paul double Z. That's all I could get. Advancer was gone. My LinkedIn. I guess because of my acting career, if you Google me, I'm the first 5 things that come up. I think my Facebook and my LinkedIn come up.
I had no trouble finding you.
Yeah. I'm not under a rock, that's for sure.
Okay. Cool. Well, look, let's take a quick break here, and we're going to take a commercial break, and then we'll be right back and continue the conversation.
Awesome. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Do you have a desire to be a part of a conscious community? I mean a community of people who get together with the purpose of strengthening their awareness muscles, deepening their relationships, and striving for the extraordinary? Check out how to get started at productivelearning.com. We are a unique self-development company, and we believe that we all have the innate ability to create and live the lives we truly want. But we also know that ability needs to be nurtured and developed. That's why we offer over 40 different workshops to our conscious community. Workshops that intentionally stretch you beyond your comfort zone towards what you truly want. Our workshops are not ordinary. We take journeys across the world from exotic scuba diving trips to rich cultural getaways. And we offer amazing workshops right here in South Orange County. Join us and find out just how extraordinary life can be. Go to productivelearning.com today or call Lisa Reed at 949-234-0628. To see how you can be a part of our conscious community, that's productivelearning.com or 949-234-0628.
And now back to Doug and his guest.
And we're here in the studio with Stephanie Paul today talking about communicating and delivering your message. Who are your clients typically, Stephanie?
That's a really good question. I work with realtors. With them, I usually work on their video blogs with them. I have workshops normally with realtors. Some of them do work with me one-to-one, but I do have frequent workshops. I have one of them coming up, actually, but that's not just for realtors. It's for anyone that wants to come along and learn how to master your message and your video blog.
Go ahead and tell us right now when it is.
It is the weekend of June 24th and 25th.
That is coming up.
10 to 4, both Saturday and Sunday. And the first day is the 7 secrets to mastering your message. And the second day is how to master your video blog. So I am selling it from a perspective of some people, if they just want to come to the first day, they can. But if you want to do the video blog, you have to attend the first day in order to do the second day. But if you're coming because you're more coming from a speaking perspective and you're not really interested in video blogs, there's still plenty to learn in the first day.
Now, this is not geared to how to produce. It's geared to how to present on.
It's geared to how to present.
Okay.
Script writing, really connecting to an audience, all the psychology behind preparing that moment before, which is incredibly important, which a lot of people just throw away. The moment before is actually way more important than the message.
What do you mean the moment before?
What happens before, how you prepare before you get on stage is incredibly important. And that means the writing the script, the rehearsal process, and what self-talk is going on.
Oh, okay.
And then really what happens before you walk on stage. I had a client of mine. She was presenting in front of a room of about 30 people as an expert in her field. And I saw the footage of her presentation, and after seeing it, I sat down and I said to her before we even started, I says, "What on earth happened before you started your presentation?" And she said, I had an argument with someone. The argument threw her entire presentation to the point where she was so flummoxed. Even when they were asking her questions on her expert opinion, she was just sort of stumbling over all that. She was so in that argument and not in the moment with her audience that it essentially destroyed her presentation.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That hurts.
And a lot of people forget that it's your moment. Like, you, whatever's happened, like, you literally have to, it's almost a meditative moment. You have to really gear in and focus on that full connection to yourself and then to your audience.
So let me bring it back to who you're doing this work for.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Thank you. We got off on a tangent. I work with executives. So I've worked with senior executives, CEOs, COOs, executive VPs, VPs, preparing them for annual sales meetings or preparing them for presentations. I've worked with clients who pitch in boardroom meetings and just want to be clearer and more concise and more succinct with their message. I've worked with professional witnesses that get hired to give their opinion in the courtroom. I've worked with, obviously, speakers and presenters. I've worked with people at executive level who maybe have you know, been in the position of CEO for 20 years, and now they're looking at being headhunted to another company, and they have to go through the job interview process. So I prepare them for those job interviews.
Painful, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people don't, you know, they forget how to
haven't
interview.
Haven't done it, yeah.
Yeah, so it's really, it's kind of interesting across the board, because it's truly about just connecting to yourself, connecting to your audience, whether that's one or many, and mastering your message. And that can be presenting all the way through to just a job interview, you know?
Now, since a lot of your clients are business clients, I mean, I work with business clients. In a business environment, they seldom have the luxury of 20-minute, 18-minute presentations, you know? Humor is sadly missing in most cases. What's your advice on for business people having a typical hour-long? Why are they always are scheduled for an hour? I don't know, but
A difficult answer to give, because it's sort of very individualized with each type of industry or the information or the facts and figures. And I think people sort of, that because they haven't been trained in the same way that I have to look at material, they don't necessarily see the opportunities for humor in their material.
They don't see the pink and red and pumpkin.
Exactly. I did have a client once. She was a criminal forensic psychologist. She was preparing for a presentation where she was training about 120 psychologists on the penal code and a law and how it changed.
I just went to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she was going to be talking for about an hour. And we started working together, and I was like, this is really god-awful boring. And she's like, I know. I'm like, we've got to come up with a way to make this more interesting. I wrote 15 jokes for her that essentially work with any crowd. I taught her how to look into the audience and find that material. I specifically asked her things like, who's there? What's your relationship with them? Who are your senior people? Will they be able to take a joke? Like, so we worked around, you know, writing some material. So she had about 15 jokes that she was able to use, and she got laughs from them. And then I came up with, this is why it's fun and why I liked the creative side of it. There was a story aspect to the way the penal code was changed. And it changed each time a criminal fought the law, or the law wasn't there, and the law had been created. So usually, it was something around a specific murder or somebody who tried to murder somebody. She specializes in that area of criminal activity. And I said, I don't know about you, but this really works for me and it's really funny. Do you think you'd be able to get away with telling these stories in a bedtime story manner? Like, once upon a time in 1987, when Joe Smith took a gun and shot a woman 13 times in the head. And she started laughing, and she said, yes, that is absolutely, it would work with this audience, because they work with gallows humor.
Sure.
They're dealing with such drastic and dire stuff. They've got to be able to laugh at it. And she said it went off really, really well. So in that aspect, I'm able to see stuff, or at least teach my clients, because I don't essentially want to be there holding your hand the whole way through. I like to teach my clients how to see it and how to eventually do it themselves, so they don't need me anymore.
Do you have some tips for our audience today?
Be willing to laugh all the time at anything. Only because, you know, is it children laugh 200 to 400 times a day, adults laugh up to about 20. If they're lucky, which is terrible. But it's actually, the benefits of laughter is just phenomenal. There was one great thing. Oxytocin is released in our body during orgasm and also giving birth. But we can also get it from hugs. And if you're nervous before you get on stage or before you get in front of a camera and you are going to be presenting in front of a boardroom pitch that means a lot to you, if you can grab someone that you know and like, and you can hug them for about a minute, it will actually relax you. You'll get oxytocin released into your bloodstream, and you'll be just kind of, nah.
I'll have to have a written excuse to hand out after I do that. Maybe I just need to be careful who I'm hugging.
Just in general, laughter is a really good thing too. I mean, if you can pull some of your favorite stand-up comic CDs, listen to them before you get on stage, if that helps. You know, cat videos. I don't know why, but everybody loves cat videos. They, you know. But yeah, you have to get into the mindset of giving the gift and coming from a really, really positive place, regardless of how bad the traffic was or who you argued with before you got on stage.
You know, a lot of material that I read lately in talking about presentations, it pumps very strongly the idea that everything should be a story, that we are a culture of storytelling.
It's not even a culture. It's doesn't matter what culture you're from, race or religion. First of all, we all laugh in the same way. We all know what somebody's doing when they're laughing, regardless of what our language or our culture is. And the other thing is, story is how we communicate. We start telling stories from the moment we can speak. You know, and it's how we, it's just human. It's just how we like to hear stuff. As humans, we if someone's a good storyteller, you know, they always end up with a lot of friends.
Yeah,
they just
they do.
And good storytellers generally can get people laughing, even though they don't realize that that's essentially what they're doing. They're not going for the joke. But what happens is they're creating a situation where we're bonding, where we're listening, where we're like, oh, yeah, we're relating to that. Like, oh, I could totally see that. We remember through pictures, sounds, and feelings. We also, you know, going back to that Maya Angelou quote that's very famous is, you know, people never remember what you said or what you did. They always remember the way you made them feel. Well, stories make us feel a certain way. And we communicate 100% emotionally. So those when people say to you, like, don't take this personally, it's business, that's BS.
Yeah.
Because everything we do, we take personally. And every way we communicate is emotionally. It's just how we built. There's nothing we can do about it. It's scientific. It's our flesh and blood. That's what we are.
You know, my son is a salesman. He is also maybe one of the best storytellers I know. You ask him how business is, and he will tell you some ridiculous story. It's just constant stories, you know. He worked for a short period of time getting some sales training working for a car dealer. And you ask him, how was the day today? You know, I was showing this guy the trunk and he got locked in. It was the funniest thing you ever heard, you know. You gravitate to people that tell you stories. You remember them. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, and I think we all have those stories. It's just that, you know, it's like when I was learning sketch and script writing, my mentors would often say to me, where's this and where's that? Because it was all in my head and I knew it. But, you know, why did I have to put it on paper so that somebody else could understand it? So we often forget that we have these great stories, but because we know them so well, we don't share them because, oh, you know, that's kind of boring. But not necessarily. That's what makes you unique and interesting to other people. And those stories need to be told.
And somebody pointed out to me, it doesn't necessarily need to be my story. I can tell your story.
Also, only if you can tell it well.
Only if I can tell it well.
Okay. If you can tell it better than me, you can tell it all day long.
Okay. Kind of lost my place here. What else do you want to share with us?
What else do I want to share? I produce a comedy show at Stillwater in Dana Point every 6 weeks. I also have one at Maggiano's twice a year, which is just, I'm pointing, but no one can see me.
No, but I know
it's
where
just
Maggiano's
across the street
is.
From where the studio is. So that's Maggiano's in Irvine. I think our next one is July 23rd. You can go to comicsunzip.com. And my schedule is up there.
Okay, for give that again. Comics.
Comics.
Unzipped.
Unzipped.com.
.com. Okay.
And I have a Comics Unzipped Facebook page. You can go there and like it.
Okay.
I also have an Advance Your. You can like that too after you become my friend or before, whichever comes first. also, Comics Unzipped, I do actually hire professional comedians for corporate, so it's just a little side thing that I do as a hobby to keep my finger in the pie because I really enjoy it. So if you're looking for a professional corporate stand-up comedian, and I know quite a few of them, you can contact me.
Now, I've got to stop you there. What am I doing as a business looking for professional comedians?
Maybe you want an interesting, funny host to host an annual sales meeting. Or any kind of meeting or, you know, expo or something like that. Christmas parties. Lots of people like to, you know, a Christmas party or a fundraiser, for example.
Okay.
Often hosts or comedians are used in that sense. Because it can bring the room back up, you know. If you've just had somebody who's just presented who's really god-awful boring and, you know, it can really change the room and the energy and lift, you know, the focus back.
So if they schedule the comic right after my presentation, I should worry.
Well, maybe we need to work together.
What else?
What else? We talked about the workshop coming up on the 24th and the 25th. TEDx is on October 14th, and that's TEDxMissionViejo.com. Goodness me, I don't know. How much time have we got to fill here?
Well, we're not trying to fill it. We're just kind of...
I can start telling stories if you want.
Well, I was going to ask you, you got a story for us today. I want to hear a good storyteller tell a story.
Okay. I will tell you a story. Only if you keep quiet. No,
that's hard for me.
Yeah. Okay. So imagine you're in Europe and you decide to go and visit a little quaint town called Bruges while you're there. And Bruges is rich with history, and in some cases it dates back before the 12th century. You know, and you get there and it's like horse-drawn carts and little cobblestone streets everywhere and fashion boutiques and delicious restaurants and more Belgian chocolate shops than, you know, Starbucks could ever dream of having in one little town. And you're offered a 2.5-hour tour guided personally with your own private tour guide around the city, and it ends up back at the Cathedral of the Holy Blood. And the tour guide says to you, well, the cathedral's closed today, but if you're here tomorrow, you should definitely go and check it out because it's two-storied, which is unusual. The lower story was built in the 12th century and the upper story was built in the 16th century. And if you're a believer, there's a vial of Christ's blood there. You can go and check it out. It was brought back from the Crusades. So what do?
Come back tomorrow.
You can come back tomorrow, exactly. And you go upstairs and you check out the 16th century cathedral, and it's your typical cathedral with high vaulted ceilings and stained glass windows and pews and, you know, Christ on a cross. And then off to the right, there's like an alcove with a staged area, and there's a woman sitting there with light emulating from below her. It's very theatrical. So, aha, this must be where the vial of Christ's blood is. So what do? The only way to see it is you have to get in line with everybody else and... You know, that expression, when in Rome, come up with a prayer or a manifestation or a quest to the universe, however you want to put it. And then it's your turn. You get up, you walk up on the stairs, you put some coins in the bucket or donation box, if that's what you'd like to call it. The bucket. Make it sound so unprofessional.
A bucket sounds like chicken.
Yeah, exactly. And you place your hand or hover your hand, because you're not allowed to touch the vial, and close your eyes, say your prayer or your request to the universe, and then you leave. And then on the way out, you notice that the 12th century cathedral, the doors are open, so you go in there and you check it out, and it's vastly different, like very simple stone, wood carvings, and you notice that you're the only one in there. You're in this cathedral 100% by yourself. You've walked around, there's no one else. So what do? You either sit down for a nap, or you decide that you want to have a little bit of meditation time. So you're there for about 15 minutes by yourself, and then somebody comes in, so you decide to wrap it up and move on with your day. The next day, you have to take a train from Bruges to Brussels, Brussels to London, take the London Underground, 2 stops at 5 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday during rush hour, then catch a train from Liverpool Street Station to Norwich with luggage and gifts and chocolate and everything that you're carrying. You're a little bit nervous about the Underground because everybody knows that it's more bizarre, like a zoo, than, you know, Grand Central Station at 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. So you ask the conductor on the train, could you give me some advice about this transition? He speaks with a very thick accent. You can't understand a word that he says, so it's very fruitless. The gentleman sitting next to you leans over and says, I'm sorry, can I interrupt? He goes, I could actually help explain that transition for you when you get to London with the Underground. You're like, oh, this is amazing, thank you. So at this point, I'm going to tell you that this story actually really happened to me.
Okay.
I was on the train with this gentleman, and then for the next 2 hours on our way into London from Brussels, we chatted up a storm. He was a wonderful conversationalist. We went all over the place and around the world with our conversation. And at the end of it, he says to me just before we get into London, he goes, you know, I'm actually going to Norwich. I'm taking exactly the same route as you are. He goes, if you don't mind, I can guide you. I can help you with your luggage. And I'm like, sweet. I was like, this is awesome. Thank you so much. At the getting off the train, I realized that I hadn't asked him what his name was. And I thought, oh my gosh, how rude of me. And I said, I'm so sorry. I'm so rude. I'm Stephanie. What's your name? And he said, Emmanuel. At this point, I started laughing. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. He goes, no. And I'm like, look, I'm not laughing at your name. I'm seriously not laughing at your name. I'm laughing at this situation. And he looked confused, and I explained to him the previous story of the previous day. And I said to him, one of the things that I asked for when I said my little prayer and I did my little meditation was I asked for my guides to be sent to me to take me to my destination. What are the statistical odds of you sitting next to me on the train going to exactly the same place and your name being Emmanuel? Because Emmanuel, for those who don't know, is also Jesus Christ's name in the Bible.
Right.
So that's why I was laughing. And that's my story about manifestation.
Well, you know, I am so sorry we're not on television because the audience has missed the animation that you bring to the studio here.
Thank you.
The visual, you know, I'm anxious to hear the recording because I know it will come across in your voice. But I think the point you just made to me, besides an interesting story, the point was that if you want this animation, you have to act it out.
Mm-hmm. And they're called act-outs.
They're
actually called act-outs. So when you see the person or you're explaining it, I mean, or I like to sometimes explain it to my clients as Italian hands. Get Italian. Get Italian with it. You know, let's see the sphere. You know,
I'm with you. I'm half Italian.
Yeah.
It's the only way we talk.
Mm-hmm. And in the improv world, the same thing is called space object work. So where you actually, you know, instead of pointing a gun. You can't see me, people, right now, but I'm pointing two fingers. That's not a gun. A gun is held like this, this. So you actually have to think of...
Yeah, like this, you all know what she means, yeah, the way you would normally point a finger and hold a gun.
Or a cup, yeah. Or, you know, like people answer the phone like this. This is not how you answer a phone. You hold the phone with the phone. So you have to create the space for the object. When you create the space for the object during your presentation, it's seen by the audience, if believe it or not. If you don't believe me, go and see a really good improv group do improv, and you see everything that they create with nothing on stage.
Wonderful. You know, I'll share a short story with you,
mm-hmm,
that sort of brings the point you're making. I was working in residential development. I was actually working for the Irvine Company. The Irvine Company owned their own TV station. It was broadcast in Irvine. Nobody watched it. This was going way back. And I was asked to go down to the studio and record the story of a particular development problem that we had solved and we were trying to deal with, because they thought, this is something that other people in the organization should hear about, and they should learn how to solve this. So I went into the studio. The techs helped me. They put me up on the stage. They got this thing, the camera going, and then they left the room. I'm the only person in the room. I'm talking to myself in an empty room for about an hour. Anyhow, I was, you know, very flattered to have been asked to do this, and afterwards I watched the video. I watched the first few minutes of the video, and then I never watched it again.
Mm-hmm.
Here, at the time, I had a full beard. Here was this stick person standing there. I never moved. There was no visible facial expression. The voice was this monotone that would absolutely kill you, mm-hmm, not put you to sleep. And it just makes the point, if you can't act out,
mm-hmm,
then it doesn't come across, and it is just boring.
And you've got to move with purpose.
Yeah.
You can't see my fingers right now, people, but I've got them sort of in a steeple, like diamond type. My fingers are connected, my hands, you know, at that point. And this is, I've heard people say, this is the power position for your fingers. No, this is the I don't care about you thing, you know. That's all that says to me. That doesn't say that I'm powerful. This is I care about
your hands are out.
You're open. Your body movements have to be open, and they have to match what you're saying. So you have to move with purpose, which is why when you're telling story, you want to be doing act outs or space object work so that you're creating a real experience for your audience, and they can connect to that. We don't. The interesting thing is when we're communicating with each other as people just in general in conversation, we move our hands naturally. We move our faces naturally. We do all that naturally. Why, when we have a script, do we suddenly become stick figures?
Yeah.
It's absurd.
Absolutely.
It's crazy.
Absolutely. Do you have an opinion to share with us about the killing by PowerPoint these days?
Oh, death by PowerPoint? Yeah. First of all, people can't read and listen at the same time. So take away your bullet points because the only person they're there for is you so that you can remember what you're supposed to say. If you've got a graph with a million things on it, just get rid of it because we can't see it. It's got to be really clean and really easy to read and see. It's got to be an image. Our short-term memory remembers words. So essentially, whether you read it or hear it, it goes in one eye, out the other, in one ear, out the other. Short-term memory, words. Our long-term memory remembers images. Images get etched into our memories. So pictures, sounds, and feelings is what you want to be using. We communicate emotionally, and we remember by the way we feel. It's all scientifically proven. Those are the things you want to be thinking about with your PowerPoint.
And here we are talking on radio.
Mm-hmm.
I hope somebody remembers.
Yes.
Stephanie, thank you very much for being with us. Is there anything that you want to share with the audience in closing here?
Have a fantastic afternoon. Make sure you laugh a lot. And a great way to start an argument is with laughter, because it doesn't go anywhere.
There you have it. Words of wisdom. Stephanie, welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio community. This has been a pleasure.
Thank you.
We'd love to have you back again. I'm anxious to hear how your workshop goes and how your TEDx and Mission Viejo goes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, look, if you've been listening to our podcast, then thanks for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. Be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some great guests. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, we're always looking for interesting people. Just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. Well, this is Doug Gefeller. I hope that you've enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals and create a little laughter in life. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.